Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 9, Chapter 19, Text Number 7. Tam eva preshta taimaya. Ramamanam ajanayaya. Vilokya kupa samvigna. Namrishyad basta karmata. Tam the he goat eva indeed preshtatamaya beloved Rama manam engage in sexual activities. Aja, the she-goat. Anyaya, with another she-goat. Vilokya, by seeing. Kupa samvigna, the she-goat who had fallen into the well. Na, not. Amrishat, tolerated. Pasta karma, the business of the goat. Tat, that. Sex is accepted here as the business of the goat. Translation, there's no purport. When the she-goat who had fallen into the well saw her beloved goat engaged in sexual affairs with another she-goat, she could not tolerate the goat's activities. Aggrieved by her husband's behavior with another, the she-goat thought that the he-goat was not actually her friend, but was hard-hearted, and was her friend only for the time being. Therefore, because her husband was lusty, she left him and returned to her former maintainer. Purport. The word Swaminam is significant. Swami means caretaker or master. Devayani was cared for by Shukracharya before her marriage. After her marriage, was cared for by Yayati. But here the word Swaminam indicates that Devayani left the protection of her husband, Yayati, and returned to her former protector, Sukracharya. Vedic civilization recommends that a woman stay under the protection of a man. During childhood, she should be cared for by her father, in youth by her husband, and in old age by a grown son. In any stage of life, a woman should not have independence. In the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, Yanisha sarabhutanam yasyam jagrati samyami tasyam jagrati bhutani sanisha pashutom mune. That what's night for all sentient beings is a time of awakening for the self-controlled. And what is the time of awakening for the self-controlled is the night for this all sentient beings. I think I got that right. Yanisha sarabhutanam. What is night for all sentient beings. Yanisha sarvabhutanam tasyam jagrati samyami is a time of awakening for the self-controlled. Tasyam jagrati bhutani, and was the time of awakening for all living entities, all the normal living, ordinary living entities. Jagrati samyami sanisha pashutel mune is the night for the self, for the introspective sage. In other words, we can have one or two visions in this world. One is the vision is that this world is a playground and we're supposed to play around here and have a good time as much as we can. The other is the vision that this world belongs to Krishna and has a purpose to serve him. Now, at any moment, we can accept one of those visions and then change it. That's Maya's job, is to help us change our vision from spiritual and material. We may have a spiritual vision one moment, and then Maya says, well, you become qualified to get a higher material vision now. Before you had a hard time figuring out how to enjoy in this material world, but you become so spiritually advanced that now you can actually enjoy here. So that yoga chalati manasa, as soon as one tries to make advancement, the maya will try to trick one by so many different types of allurements. And as Prabhupada writes, not only in one place, but in many places, in the Srimad Bhagavatam, basically speaking, there are only two allurements in the material world. And they have their subdivisions. Women and wealth. Haranyakashipu. Haranya means gold, and Kashipu means soft bed. So in order to enjoy soft beds, you need some wealth, gold. Because nowadays, they have paper money, and people actually believe it's worth something, so therefore it's worth something. Otherwise, it's just a piece of paper. And even gold is only worth something because people think it's worth something. They'll exchange it for a soft bed. But ultimately, that's material life. It may not, when it's revealed, it's not so glamorous. Therefore, in polite company, people usually don't reveal these things. Because without spiritual life, there's not much left for the conditioned soul. He has to pray for some illusion, otherwise his life is useless. When one is younger and the body is full of energy and impulses, then one can think, well, life is enjoyable. But then after some time, after a brief period of time, it's not as enjoyable as it was before. As a matter of fact, then one tries to enjoy too much in the material world, then one rapidly loses his energy and his ability to enjoy. Therefore, one has to take intoxication, or in modern society, one has to go and watch movies or something, which is a kind of intoxication, or television, or skim the internet, or something, so that one can live in one's imagination, that actually one is still strong and capable of enjoying on the subtle platform. But if one can change one's vision, then one can actually learn how to enjoy on the spiritual platform. But that takes a change of consciousness, a change of vision. And that change of vision requires also a restraining the senses. Because Krishna says, Dayato Vishayam Pumsam Sangas Te Shupajayate Sangas Sanjayate Kama Kama Krodo Vijayate Krodo Bhavati Samoha Samoha Smriti Vibramsat Smriti Bramsat Buddhinasho Buddhinashat Pranashati. As soon as we stop trying to enjoy or trying to come to the spiritual platform, then the result is that maya will offer us something. Well, you have nothing to do. Well, here, try this out. Try this material happiness out for a while. Chew on it for a while and see if you like it. And as soon as one thinks, all right, let me think about that, then maya will, because everything begins within the mind, and everything is the mind, where it goes is according to our intelligence, our conception. So if our conception allows the mind to wander to a sense object, the maya says, I got you. Ah, we got you. And the result is, you know, maya says, here's a gift, here's a free lust. Oh, I go, oh, I'm in love. It must be love. What else could it be? Maya gave it to me. And then when the whole world is seen as a big romance, birds are chirping, at least on the record we have, on the video or whatever, even during the winter, the birds start chirping and love is in the air. And there's hope life could be good again. So then lust comes, and then, of course, if one is actually able to enjoy a little bit, they went, oh, it was nice, but it could be nicer. One becomes greedy for material happiness. And then the result is, if any obstacle is there, any problem, then we get frustrated. And there are different degrees of frustration. All right, maybe it didn't go right this time. Tomorrow will get better. Oh, it didn't happen today either. What's happening? Maybe something's wrong with everyone else except for me. Or maybe I'm a victim. Life is unfair. Good people like me get the short end. Maybe I should become bad. Then I can get what I want. Good people finish last, they tell me now. So then one goes from passion to anger, ignorance, and one will do anything to get that taste again. That one drop of honey, that one drop of water in the desert. I need it. I can't live without it. And then Maya will give us a whole drama of where the hero, the heroine, a whole vision, how I'm actually a good person and I'm doing good for everyone, even though they may not appreciate it. I'm like Arjuna shooting arrows into them. They may complain, but actually it's for their benefit. Maya creates a whole scenario, a whole vision of which we're living in this material world in one of the seven rasas, compassion, hara, chivalry, fear, and we think this is rasa, this is enjoyment. If you're not afraid, you get a little taste for fear, then you go to a horror movie. Just stimulate your bayatsa rasa, your fear rasa, or terror rasa, or a ghastly rasa. It's a rasa. So there's a material side of that also, the illusory rasa, and people were living in it, thinking that they're going to enjoy in some way or another. And what is that enjoyment ultimately? You're the center of attention. People are going to recognize you. They're going to think about you. They're going to, manmana bhava mad bhakto madhyayji mam namaskuru. I'm going to become the people who think about me. And amongst all those persons who are thinking about me, they'll become my devotee in one of those rasas. Even the hara rasa. They have five earrings in their ears, and I have three through my nose and two through my tongue. I'm really worthy of meditation. Let everyone see the Adi Rasa and Bayatsa and Ghastly Rasa. And then the result is we lose our intelligence. We have no idea, even if we had some knowledge from our childhood, even if we heard Bhagavad Gita, it's all lost. It's all forgotten as some kind of something in the past I can't remember. We lose our remembrance, and when we lose our remembrance, then our intelligence goes out the window also, because we can't remember what we experienced, what we learned. And then the result is we get more and more involved without hesitation, immaterialistic life, immaterial, because our material vision becomes more and more cemented, and our spiritual vision becomes more and more of a dream, something that we can't quite remember. It was there, exactly what it was, I can't recall. So the opposite is there. If we hear a spiritual vision, we try to see what it's talking about, what's being said to us. We try to utilize our intelligence to see things from the material, spiritual point of view, to see that, yes, there is a reality. There are men, there are women. There are 8,400,000 species of life where there are men and women. But inside of each one of those men and women, or male and female, there's a soul. And the aim of life is to get the soul to get free from material entanglement. So then we use our intelligence, and if our memory becomes clarified, we start remembering something. Because without remembrance, therefore we have repetition. If you have never noticed in a Bhagavatam class, sometimes there's repetition. Sometimes we're reminded that we're eternal souls. Someone may protest, I heard that yesterday, do you have something new? Okay, today you're not a soul, that's something new. You're a material body. No, there's repetition. Why? Because if there's enough repetition, then our intelligence may be awakened and our memory may be awakened. We may actually see what's being said. Memory is not just remembering like a parrot. Pali Vana Krishna. In the English they say Pali Vana Cracker for the parrot. I don't know if they have what they have in Slovenia here. Pali Vana Cracker, Pali Vana Cracker. And they teach parrots to repeat things. So usually people don't have much imagination. They get the parrot to repeat Pali Vana Cracker. Pali is the name of the bird. So Polly wants to ask the bird, the parrot wants to ask for a cracker. So the master says, Polly want a cracker. He teaches the parrot that. And the Polly goes, parrot, parrot, Polly want a cracker, Polly want a cracker. So Polly learns to talk about how he wants a cracker. It takes repetition. The same way, if we hear and we try to use our intelligence, the way we can actually see if our intelligence is working or what degree it's working, because everyone's intelligence is working. Even the ant's intelligence is working. Otherwise, it can't find the sugar. So our intelligence is always working. But we can see how well our intelligence is working if we can remember something. Like after this class is life after the class for most of us. So we walk out of here. No, the question is, have we heard anything? And what is the test that we heard something? Do we remember anything that went on? All right, so we walk out of the class, and we don't remember anything, but we don't really try to find, we don't ask ourselves, what did I just learn? So we don't feel guilty that I didn't listen to anything. I'm a good person. I can't remember anything, but I never asked myself if I remembered anything. That way I don't feel guilty that I didn't listen at all or I didn't take it seriously. I didn't really think it had any basis in my life, so why should I bother remembering it? I'm not going to apply it today, what's being said, so why should I bother even try to remember it? It's a useless waste of time. It's just like when I went to school. I went through so many years of school, and if you ask me anything, trigonometry, advanced calculus, geography, I forgot it all because it's useless. It had no value in my life whatsoever. I don't even know what a square root is anymore. That's square. So similarly, if we take the Bhagavatam class or something like that, we listen and we walk out of class and we don't even try to think, what did I just hear? What does it have to do with my life? How am I going to apply it? Only when we apply it do we remember, when we try to think like that, can we remember it. And what is remembrance for? It's protection, so that in a world of illusion that we're floating around in, it gives us some vision. It's like you're at night, everything is dark, and you have a little flashlight on the top of your head, and you forget that you have a flashlight, so you never turn it on. So you're just wandering in the darkness. But if you can remember, I have a flashlight on top of my head that I can turn the flashlight on, and then I can see around me, and I can navigate much better in this world of formerly what was darkness. Then what am I going to see? We're going to see a world where everyone's wandering around trying to satisfy either their frustrations nowadays, trying to avoid things that are frustrating, and their desire to enjoy in the material world. Mostly people are just trying to avoid calamities, death. disease, old age, the main problems of life. And then if they have a couple of minutes, they try to enjoy. A little eating, sleeping, mating, defending, try to enjoy a little. So that's, unless we see like that, then we won't be encouraged, we won't know what to do in order to actually utilize our present body, mind, and intelligence in Krishna's service. We'll be just one of the other victims of illusory energy, wandering around the material world without any vision, always in anxiety over my impending death and problems that accompany that or before that. And looking around, maybe something I can enjoy. There's something here, something to eat. I hope my bed is warm tonight. Who knows? Romeo always met Juliet. And I'll work hard. I'll defend myself against all these other adverse people who don't appreciate and love me the way they should. So therefore, one has to hear regularly Srimad Bhagavatam. Therefore, this particular section of the Bhagavatam tells us that of all the different things that people think are wonderful and desirable, the thing that will throw us into illusion the quickest is to look around and try to see where my soulmate is, who loves me, where the next romance could be. That's the most dangerous thing. Because the material world is a reflection of Radha and Krishna's pastimes, so we can elect. We have our choice. Either we're going to play in Radha Krishna's pastimes as their servant, assisting them to become in their loving affairs, or we're going to play around this material world, assisting our gross and subtle bodies in finding their soul, their loving affairs. Imitation. Instead of actually Radha and Krishna's pastimes, we have two puppets getting together, imitating Radha and Krishna, and thinking that actually, it's like little children, they play dolls. Here's Romeo doll, here's Juliet doll, and they're falling in love. It's all imagination. The dolls are not actually in love. It's just people have an imagination that they are. They play in their dollhouse. This is my dollhouse, this is my kitchen, plastic kitchen. So the material world is one big place for imagination, where I can run wild. But there is relationships here, even there's family life, grihastha life. But if that's based on with Krishna in the center, then it's real life. If the idea of sex is to have children, to raise them in Krishna consciousness, then that's real life. That's in Krishna consciousness. Then we can actually, then that life, which is necessary for the majority of people, then it advances one towards spiritual life, towards pure consciousness. And if one thinks that this current idea, you know, free, let my senses run wild, and if I can't do that, at least let my mind run wild. And if I can't do that, at least let my mind run wild once in a while, whenever no one can see my mind working. So one has to become convinced that actually, yes, eating is there, obviously, in the Hare Krishna movement. No one has ever died from what I understand, from starvation in the Hare Krishna movement. Many devotees have died from overeating, though. So eating is obviously there in the Hare Krishna movement. And I've yet to find any devotee who doesn't somehow or another get some sleep. Even sometimes the devotees used to get not enough sleep, but they got sleep one way or the other. It's impossible to avoid. I had one disciple, he would never sleep properly. So one time during a kirtan, he jumped up in the air, and he fell asleep in the middle of the air. It wasn't very good, the consequences. But anyways, and even we have children, so obviously the stalk didn't bring them. There's also mating in the Hare Krishna movement. And there's also defense. We look both ways. We are taught, even the Hare Krishna movement, to look both ways before you cross the street. So we also have some defense there. We even lock our doors sometimes. So everything is there, but it's done in for Krishna, that's all. Then it becomes Krishna conscious. Then we don't lose our Krishna consciousness for our senses and mind dragging us away from Krishna. That's the... So one can have all these activities, but one should also understand we shouldn't lose our vision, our light of Krishna consciousness in what we're doing. And then we'll be safe. We won't fall into the victims of the spiraling down from goodness, passion, to ignorance to the lower species of life. We won't be in danger of losing our progress towards the spiritual world. So I'll stop there. Thank you. Any questions or comments? Yes.
Something from the concept, from the purport.
Here's the microphone.
There's words Swami mentioned in the connection of to take care and caretaker. So I was wondering, because we call our sannyasis Swamis, Prabhupada, whatever like that. So does this mean that every sannyasi sees everyone else as their children?
Not necessarily. There are different types of sannyasis. But anyhow, an actual... Sannyasi doesn't see everyone as their children. He sees everyone as Krishna's child. Vidya Vinaya Sampane Brahmani Gavi Hastini Shuni Chaiva Swapake Cha Pandita Samadarshana. He sees that everyone, that in everyone's heart there's the super soul and there's the soul, and therefore the Supreme Lord. And therefore, on behalf of Krishna, he may take different roles. Obviously, he doesn't play the role that his wife is his child. He may play the role that his children are his children. Or others that he may see in relation to Krishna. It depends. But he sees things that ultimately, whatever role he takes on behalf of Krishna. That he's a child of Krishna like everyone else. One thing in the purport which I didn't mention is that women being protected, not a very popular subject matter nowadays. I don't know about in Slovenia, if people are claiming that women should be, if you tell people women should be protected, whether you're going to win any post in the assembly, in the parliament, campaigning on the platform that women should be protected. Because generally speaking, when people hear the word protection, they think of exploitation. They think women should, someone's claiming women should be exploited rather than protected. Because men, they're not trained how to protect. First of all, they don't know that they're actually supposed to be protected themselves by Shastra. A man is supposed to be protected by controlling his senses according to Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra. Therefore, then he can give protection to others. If he's not controlled himself, then how can he, if he's not protected, if he's performing activities in illusion, he's not protected himself, then how can he protect anyone else? So protection doesn't mean just for women, it means for men. Men have a natural inclination, if they actually have understand things properly, then they have a natural inclination to protect women. And women have a natural inclination to be protected by someone. So if they connect to someone who is in the disciple succession coming from Krishna, in the sense, whatever it may be, whatever the knowledge may be, then everyone's protected. But when women become independent and the men become independent of Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra, it's a hellish situation. But the ones who suffer the most are the women. Because as Prabhupada was not so shy when I was in Dallas in 1974, I think, maybe it was later than that. And Prabhupada would visit. One time he visited, and he was going around America at that time talking about women's liberation. So when he came to the airport that time, one lady was asking him, you know, what do you think about women's liberation? Women's rights? Do you actually believe that women are inferior, subordinate to men? So Prabhupada said, yeah, of course they're subordinate to men. He said, women are, you know, the mood of a woman is here, take me, I'm your servant. Of course, in the back of her mind, she doesn't mean I'm your slave. She means I'm your servant, and you're supposed to serve me too. And serve the family. No one wants to become a slave. I have nothing else to do. I you know, could I become your slave? No, that's a technique. But everyone wants to become a servant. And if they're a servant of someone who's actually going to take care of them and protect them, then they actually feel safe. They feel satisfied. And they somehow or another get into a relationship with someone who wants to exploit them and not take care of them, neither them or their family, then they're exploited. And most of the men nowadays are just being trained up. They're not trained up how to actually take care of the family, how to take care of the woman properly, because they have no higher understanding. They have no spiritual consciousness is diminished. And therefore, the only thing left is simply gross and subtle sense gratification. And women themselves, they don't know what the purpose of life is because they're also not trained. But when women become uncontrolled, in a sense, what does control mean? Control means when we have a spiritual vision and we take shelter of Krishna for our activities, then Krishna arranges us to be under the internal energy. So that's control. And when we're not under the internal energy, the senses will just drive us. That's called uncontrolled senses. So we ourselves, we have a choice. Either we can experience uncontrolled senses or we can experience the senses being controlled by Krishna. In any case, we're not the our control means we voluntarily surrender to Krishna. But when there's uncontrolled senses, the whole society, then when women get pregnant, then what happens? I remember Prabhupada talking to one reporter, and Prabhupada said, she said, well, that's my choice. You know, whether I want what to do with the child. So Prabhupada said, that's a very good choice. Either you beg from the government or you kill the child. You think that's a very good choice? Prabhupada asked the lady reporter. She said, well, that's my choice. And then Prabhupada turned to his disciple. He said, what is 32 ounces. You know what 32 ounces means? Prabhupada, one time, his professor at the university, Dr. Weinklor, I forget his name, said that they had done measurement. And they found out that the maximum amount of brain substance that a man had was 64 ounces, and the maximum for a woman was 32. Now, Prabhupada didn't really use that as exact measurement. It just means that women have a tendency, they can be tricked by men. That's all. They can be fooled into the worst situation possible. Which is, what is that situation? The men say, we're both equal. Now let's have sex. Let's enjoy together. And if you get pregnant, then we're both partners. So you take the child and I go away. You're independent. So then the woman has a choice. Either kill the child or beg from the government. She can't do everything. She can't get a job, you know, may have a 1 month old child. So that's her independence. And the lady reporter says, oh, I think that's a good idea. That's my choice. What kind of choice is that? It's not both choices. Better choice is if you're going to have sex and produce a child, make sure the man's going to take care of you and the child so the child can grow up to be a human being rather than an animal. Otherwise, it's bad karma. If you kill the child, You'll have to come back in your next lifetime and be in the womb of another mother and be killed repeatedly. And if you beg from the government, then how can you raise the child? The child needs both a father and mother, not just the mother. The mother gives affection, usually. And it's very hard to give both together, affection and discipline. Therefore, the child grows up, you know, with half a brain, half a consciousness. So this idea that women should be protected is not some kind of quaint thing from, you know, some kind of ancient culture, barbaric culture called the Varnashram Dharma. It's just natural psychology. It's necessary for human society. Otherwise, that's what we have now. People are bewildered, confused, frustrated, and they think they're making progress. They think it's, you know, maybe nowadays people have wakened up a little bit during the COVID crisis, the pandemic. Maybe they got a little brains, a little understanding. It's not at all progressive. But then they forget. Back into the same sense gratification, everything's all right. Prabhupada said, just like the goats, they're lining up for the slaughterhouse. But even before they get into the slaughterhouse, they're having sex with each other. You know they're going to be slaughtered the next moment. Because of lack of knowledge and intelligence. They forget. They don't know what's going on. So, we're trying to give people, by distributing these books, we're trying to give some people some vision, something they can see. So that their memory, if they can hear some intelligence, and maybe they'll get some remembrance. Maybe their mother taught them to be good. Otherwise, Santa Claus won't give them a present. So something maybe will spark some memory in there, and then maybe it'll change their lives a little bit. Anything else? Kuala Grantara Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai.